Yes, Lord.
Yeah. Discreet, man. Go!
Back in the place to be.
Yeah.
Did you notice how my niggas stay with me?
Street.
House game, wood flow, save a seat.
Bang.
Up five, courtside, JT for three.
Three.
F on the rim, stand for fuck them, I'm eating.
Black.
Women lying, men lying, numbers ain't
welcome
cheating.
To show number 82. As always, thank you guys so much for rocking me these first 81 shows. By now, you know where to find me. If you go to SoundCloud, Stitcher, as well as iTunes, search for Trill Withers, the show will come up. Do me a favor and subscribe there so that the show will come to you every week. Got the email address. That's TrillWithersPodcast@gmail.com. Again, TrillWithersPodcast@gmail.com. And the website is lookingupfromthefloor.wordpress.com. First things first, the BQBX shirt campaign has come to an end. It was a successful campaign, and that's because of you. So I do want to thank each and every one of you that ordered a shirt, took the time to show your support for the show. Now, there was an email that I had received. It was something that I didn't even really consider, and it was about people that, you know, would like to support the show but may not necessarily feel comfortable wearing a shirt that says Black Quarterback X, i.e. white people. So I get that. I understand that completely. That was something that slipped my mind. So, I mean, if you do want to contribute, it'd be greatly appreciated. PayPal is the same as the show email, trillwitherspodcast@gmail.com. Venmo is the same as Twitter, Tyler I Am. So if you want to show support that way, it'd be greatly appreciated. But I did want to announce that the campaign did wrap. It was successful. And I know a lot of people have already started receiving shirts. You should have those within the next couple of days. So if you haven't got your shirt by, I say probably next Wednesday, let me know when you get it. Let me know if you haven't received it yet, but everybody should receive their shirt by next Wednesday. So again, I did want to say thank you for that. And if you did want to support in any other way, PayPal, TrillWithersPodcast@gmail.com, or Venmo, Tyler I Am. All right, moving on to the NBA Finals. We had a hell of a Game 5. We had a great, great Game 5, and I think we're going to have a great Game 6 as well. Like, I remember on Twitter before Game 5, I said that LeBron was going to go off. You know, no Draymond, his back was against the wall. And I was told by multiple people, that they were skeptical of that because Andre Iguodala was still playing. Now, I like Andre Iguodala. I think he's a great player, Skip Bayless, an Olympian, finals MVP, things of that nature. I played with him at Arizona. I coached him in Philadelphia. But having said that, Skip Bayless, this is LeBron James we're talking about. And LeBron James did exactly what I thought he would. Like, he went off, had a game for the ages. He and Kyrie both did, but LeBron was just doing everything. Everything on both ends of the court, and it was an all-time game. I don't know if I can say the best game I've ever seen from him, but it's certainly up there. And if they win this series, it's going to definitely climb in those rankings. Now, it's definitely a lot easier to be Iguodala when you have, you know, Draymond and Bogut behind you. And there's no shame in that. They're a great team, a great defensive team. But, you know, Game 5, he didn't have Draymond behind him. Game 6, he's not going to have Bogut behind him. You know, Iggy played off him a little bit knowing he didn't. I think he played off him a little bit knowing he didn't have that rim protection. And LeBron hit a couple jumpers and got going, and that was that. So for Game 6, Draymond is going to be back. But again, no Bogut. It was announced today he's out for the rest of the series with that knee. Cleveland's at home. It's still an elimination game. And I'm still betting with LeBron James. Like, I think he's going to have another ridiculous game. I don't know about stat line yet. I may come up with that, you know, right before the game. But he took more free throws in Game 5 than he did in 3 and 4 combined. And I think that's going to continue. Like, Kyrie had an amazing game. He was eating Steph Curry alive. Like Kyrie is such a gifted offensive player. And, like, he's heating up. Like, he scored 30 points in 3 straight finals games. And I don't see any reason why he can't make it 4. Like, I don't see, with the way he's playing right now, I can't see Kyrie going out there and having, like, a 4-for-17 night. I just don't see it. Like, he scored 30, 34, and 41. And not only are the point totals rising, but his field goal percentage is rising, too. Like, he's either in the zone or he has figured out something about this Golden State defense. But either way, I think he's playing much too well to have a stinker at home. So I think he's going to have another big game. Kevin Love, though. Like, oof. Like, I kind of feel bad for him. Like, as bad as you can feel for a person that makes, like, $18 million a year and is still a white man in America. So I feel bad for him, like, just a little bit. But, like, he's sacrificed since he's been here. You know, touches, stats, all-star games, all-NBA, all that. He's sacrificed, and it's just not working. It's just not working. Like, this is a bad series for him, but, you know, this is the series that matters. That's the way it goes. But whatever he did in Game 5, that cannot happen. That can't happen. He played 33 minutes. He scored 2 points. And he had 3 rebounds. And both of those are unacceptable. But the points, okay, you have an off night. The rebounds, that can't happen. He can't play 33 minutes and only have 3 rebounds when his rebounding is a big part of his skill. That can't happen. So I think they're either going to have to bring him off the bench, which I think he would be open to. He did it before. I don't know if Tyronn Lue would. But they're either going to have to bring him off the bench, or I think they're going to have to stagger his minutes to play with bench units. Like, let him lead them offensively, because it's just not working this series. It's just not working. If he's giving you, you know, 2 points and 3 boards, you might as well play Channing Frye, who is also not good at defense, also not going to grab very many rebounds, but can, you know, and will shoot the three-pointer. So I think I would either start Richard Jefferson if I'm Tyronn Lue, and then when LeBron gets his first breather, bring Kevin Love in, you know, to be the focal point of the offense. Or, you know, you could start Love, just sub him out first. Bring in Jefferson early. That way, again, when LeBron takes his first break, you bring Love back in. Again, he's a focal point of the offense. So you got to figure he won't have that bad of a game again. You got to figure he'll be at home so he can get something going. Like, either that or just not play him altogether. Like, he's not giving you defense either. So if he's not giving you defense, he's not giving you three-pointers, he's not hitting the boards, like, just don't play him altogether. So I don't know what they're going to do. That's what I think they should do. I don't know what they're going to do. But on the other hand, the Warriors, I feel like the Warriors, like, have kind of got to close this out in 6. Like, I know Game 7 would be them at home and, you know, all the refereeing or whatever. I do think the Cavs have got a lot of shitty calls in this series. So it would be the Warriors at home for Game 7. But I would not want to go against LeBron James in a Game 7. Period. Like, he has shown me way too much, and I won't count him out. Not yet. And the loss of Bogut is, it's a big deal. It's not a huge deal. It's not Clay missing the game or anything. I think he's playing like 15, 20 minutes a game, if that. So, you know, he never plays a ton of minutes, especially in this series. But the minutes he plays have been, like, pretty solid minutes. And him not being out there kind of forces you to go to the death lineup. You know, which has been working for them, but I just feel like it's one less trick up your sleeve. Like, if you start with the death lineup, what are you going to pull when, you know, Cleveland's on a run or you're in a slump or whatever? Like, you've already played that card. It's either that or it's forcing you into the $75 million man Festus Ezeli, which I would not feel comfortable about whatsoever. So if this game 6, like, Festus is either going to raise that contract to like $100 million or he's going to drop it to like $40 million. There's no in-between. He's not going to have an all right game. He's not going to give decent minutes. He's either going to be unstoppable. He's going to be like fucking Hakeem Olajuwon out there, or he's going to be borderline unplayable. So I'm ready to see that. And the last thing about the finals, and we'll move on. I feel like we got to talk about Wardell Curry, man. I feel like we got to talk about it. Now, he finished with, I think, 25.7 assists. But in the second half of an elimination game at home, he scored 5 points on 3-for-13 shooting. 5 points on 3-for-13 shooting at home in an elimination game, like, for the title, for the NBA title. So that doesn't, you know, it doesn't make him overrated. It doesn't make him undeserving of the MVPs. But it does, however, make him deserving of these jokes, and that's what he's going to get. Like, he didn't play well at all. His shot wasn't falling. It happens. But he was getting lit up on defense. Like, Kyrie was killing him defensively. And I don't know how many turnovers he had. It just seemed like Steph made a number of careless passes. Like, he, He just seemed checked out for whatever reason, which, again, he didn't have a good game. It happens. But, I mean, when you're the two-time MVP, you're going to catch these jokes. You're going to get the flack as well. You should. That's part of the game. And it's been said, but imagine if LeBron did that. Imagine if Kyrie did that. Imagine if just about anybody else but Steph did that. What kind of takes they'd be getting. Like if Durant, Westbrook, any of these guys did that. 5 points on 3-for-13 shooting. You know, with the title on the line. And it's not just that. Like, for the entire series, he's been outplayed by Kyrie. Like, I would say by a reasonable margin. Like, in this series, Kyrie's got more points. He's shooting better from the field. He's getting to the line more. He has more steals. He has less turnovers. And he has the same number of assists. So, again, Kyrie is great. That's taking nothing away from him. But you're the two-time MVP. And that can't happen because Golden State goes into every game knowing that they have an advantage of the point guard position, and that hasn't been the case this series. For last series, it's debatable. Like, Russ had a lot of good moments, but he didn't shoot very well. He had a lot of turnovers. He played terrible defense. I would almost call that one a wash, if not give the advantage to Steph, just because Russ is bad is so detrimental to what his team is trying to do. But for this series, Kyrie has been outplaying him. And, you know, part of having the best team ever is knowing that, you know, you don't have to bring it every night. You know, somebody will step up, Clay or Draymond, Livingston, Barbosa, somebody will step up. But I feel like you can't keep getting outplayed for that. That you can't keep dying on screens. You can't keep, like, not even being in the picture when Kyrie goes up for a shot. Like, you can't keep making these careless passes. And, I mean, you can. You just can't keep doing those things and think you're going to escape these jokes, because I can confirm that that is not the case. So game six, I'm definitely looking forward to game six. I'm going with the Cavs. I want to see the Cavs win this. I want a game seven. This has not been a very good playoffs. I saw the other day that there's been more 20-point victories this playoffs than in the past two playoffs combined. There's been more 30-point victories this playoffs than in the past, I think, two or three seasons combined. So this has not been a good playoffs. So I'm hoping, I'd damn near praying, that we get another epic game six from LeBron and we go to game seven and it's just game seven for all the marbles. I'm hoping, and you should be hoping that too, because after that is baseball to the Olympics. So if you want to watch baseball and soccer, that's pretty much it. So I don't really fuck with either one of those. So I'm praying for a game seven. All right, next thing I want to talk about was Muhammad Ali. You know, he passed last week, as everybody knows, but did have a guest on the show, so I didn't really get to speak about it the way I wanted to, so I'll just say something brief about Ali. Muhammad Ali has been somebody that I have looked up to for a long time, like basically all of my life, and it started because he was from Kentucky and I was from Kentucky. That's pretty much all I needed. He was from Louisville, which is fine. We all have our flaws. Nobody's perfect. But I used to lie. Like, I'm not from Louisville. I'm from Lexington. And I used to lie and say that I was from Louisville because Muhammad Ali was from Louisville. Like, that's how big of a deal he was to me. So I used to, you know, read whatever I could about him and watch whatever I could about him. And, like, when I say stay righteous at the end of the show, he is a part of that. You know, as far as refusing to go to war, you know, he stayed righteous to himself. And he lost a lot because of that. You know, he stripped of the title, as you know, and he lost three prime years. I think he was gone from like 25, or he was out of commission from 25 to 28. That's three prime years of fighting, three prime years of money, more importantly. But like, that's what being righteous is to me. That's why I say it. That's why I mean it every single week. Like, I can deal with a lot personally, but I find it very hard to deal with the consequences of my actions when I know, you know, that I did something that is not true to myself, you know, and the reward, you know, it doesn't make it worth it to me. Like, not for money, not for women, not for, I mean, that's really about it. Money and women, that's really about it, if we're being honest. But if you have to, I feel like if you have to go outside of your character for it, then it's just not worth it to me. And learning a lot about Muhammad Ali helped teach me that. And so I watch, you know, whatever I can, read whatever I can about he and Malcolm X. You know, as you may or may not know, Malcolm X, like, Malcolm X and my mother are probably 1A and 1B in no particular order there as far as my favorite people ever. And like just looking at, you know, the things they said, the things they were doing at that time, they don't even seem real. Like they almost seem like fictional characters. You know, Malcolm died like 25 years before I was born. The only Muhammad Ali I've ever known, you know, has been severely limited by Parkinson's. So seeing these guys in like 1964, 1963, you know, in their prime, like it had to be unreal. And it's so far-fetched to me because it's like we don't have anybody like that now. We don't have anybody like that now. And that's why it's like they don't even seem real. Like they seem like some comic book characters or some shit. So I would just say, like, take this chance. You know, watch I Am Ali. It's a documentary. It was on Netflix. I don't know if it's still on there. Watch Muhammad and Larry. I know that one's on Netflix. Watch the old Muhammad Ali interviews. You know, watch him when he was old and young. You can see, you know, how his demeanor, how his stance on things changed. Like, see how this man was talking to these white people in the 60s. And think about, one, how it'd go over now, and two, how it'd go over in the 60s. And that's exactly what he was doing. Like, watch the old fights. See why this man was the greatest. You know, recently Prince passed, and that was my chance to get into things, you know, I wasn't previously hip to. And now I'm like, okay, I'm on board. This guy was great. You know, so let this be your chance if you weren't already familiar with Ali. Like, he really was the greatest. And I feel like for a lot of fields, you know, you say that and it's an argument. Like, I know just the other day I was saying Barry Bonds is the best baseball player ever, which I believe. And a lot of folks were giving me Ken Griffey Jr. and Babe Ruth and a whole bunch of other people who are not better than Barry Bonds. Like, in football, you could say, like, Barry Sanders or whatever is the greatest ever, and somebody will tell you Jim Brown. You could say Prince is the greatest, and somebody will tell you Stevie Wonder. Somebody will tell you Michael Jackson. Like, you could even say Michael Jordan's the greatest, and somebody will give you Bill Russell or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But if somebody says Muhammad Ali is the greatest, and everybody's like, yep, yep. So, you know, we'll never see another like him for a number of reasons, for a multitude of reasons, but mostly, like, the main one being that he was a one of one. Like, he really was the greatest, and he will definitely be missed. All right, next thing I want to say something briefly. I went to Trap Karaoke this week when it came to Atlanta. It was cool. It was cool. Trap Karaoke is cool in theory, not as much in practice. Not as much in practice, and I'll tell you why. And this is just from what I saw. Young niggas are too comfortable these days. Like, young niggas are way too comfortable. They're way too cool, you know, to get hype. And it's like the men and the women. Like, I was there and I'm just seeing all these young folks, and everybody's dressed for comfort, which is cool. But when you dress for comfort, you're not really trying to get hype. And I guess that's fine too. It's just not what I was expecting. So maybe that's on me for having expectations for things. I know better. So I've learned my lesson there. Like, I was thinking, I remember the song Stilettos Pumps in the Club by Crime Mob would come on and folks would go crazy. And I just think, like, something like that would never work now because all the young ladies are wearing Vans and, like, Birkenstocks and Jesus sandals, which is cool. But again, they weren't really getting it, like, as hype as I expected. And the young niggas, like, they're, like, too cool for haircuts. They're too cool for socks. And they're too cool for, like, mobbing, like, getting hype like that. So on one hand, I get it. Because I'm all about comfort. Like, I don't know how many people remember, like, the phase where niggas wore, like, suits in the club and, like, blazers and, like, dress shoes and shit in the club. That was a little much for your boy. It's a little much. And now niggas have went, like, the complete other way with, like niggas look like they dress for bed, like pajamas in the club. And again, like, more importantly, the ladies. I didn't see, like, a single lady rush to the floor in the way, like, a back that ass up would have did, you know. So unless you, again, came with a lady, from what I saw, the ladies wasn't really about that action, which is certainly their prerogative. It's just different to see. So I don't know. Just my takeaway from that is everybody's, like, too cool to sweat now. Everybody's too cool to get hype and dance or whatever. So this is just, you know, this week, and damn, I'm really old as fuck. So I mean, that's really all I got to say. I'll catch you next week, like the same old as fuck time, same old as fuck place. But yeah, I don't know. These young niggas are too comfortable, and I just don't know. All right, next thing I wanted to go over was all the wild shit that happened in Orlando this past week or so. And first off, the shooting of Christina Grimmie, who, you know, 22-year-old singer, she was on The Voice. And she was killed after her own concert. After her own goddamn concert, signing autographs for her fans. Like, think about the demographics of a 22-year-old girl or a 22-year-old woman's concert. So, you know, like, there were a lot of young people there. You know, there were a lot of young girls there. You know, there were a lot of families there, I'm sure. And this gunman runs up and kills her, shoots her dead. And her brother, her own brother, has to tackle the gunman, you know, after watching him kill his sister. And then the gunman kills himself. And I had read something, somebody that was behind the gunman in line said, you know, he approached her like normal and she opened up her arms to give him a hug like an old friend. And he shot her dead. He shot this 22-year-old woman dead. And this really fucked with me. This has been fucking with me all week. And, you know what I'm saying? It's not because I'm a big fan of The Voice. I wasn't, you know, really aware of her before this. So it wasn't like I was a big fan of the music. But, you know, from everything I've seen, like, she just seemed like a genuinely good person, you know, with so much life left that she was ready to live. And then I look at myself and I, like, here I am with all this life left and I don't want any of it. I don't want to live any of it. So the contrast of that has really fucked with me. It's really fucked with me just imagining, you know, the last image that her fans had of her. You know, it's one thing if she passed and her fans can always, you know, listen to her music in memory of her. But now the people that were there that saw that, anytime they listen to her music or think back on that concert, they're going to think about they saw this woman, you know, open her arms for a hug and was shot dead. They saw her take her last breath. And yeah, that's just really been fucking with me lately. And then, you know, what, 48 hours, if that. After that, you know, had the Pulse nightclub shooting happen. And, you know, as you know there, this man went in, you know, and killed 49 people. And I think he injured another 50. And then come to find out in the, you know, least surprising turn of events ever, that he was on gay apps, you know, frequenting gay clubs and... You know, the evidence points to him being a gay man. And, like, it's not to make light of it, you know, or excuse his actions, you know, at all, because he's a piece of shit, and I'm very glad that he's dead. But I recently watched a documentary this week on Netflix, and I recommend it to everybody. It's called The Mask We Live In. The Mask We Live In on Netflix. And it's about young boys growing up in America and the pressure from society, you know, on these young boys about what is masculinity. And there was a line or a portion in there that mentioned, you know, when you're taught that emotion is weakness, you start to hate it in an attempt to remove it from yourself. And within that, you start hating anything seen as weaker than you. And when you start hating anything seen as weaker than you, that is the root for both homophobia and misogyny. And I think you saw that here. You know, he went to a gay club, killed a number of gay people, and I believe it said he... You know, when they talked to his wife, I'm not certain. I thought they said that he was abusive to her, which makes sense. If that's the root for, you know, homophobia and misogyny, that makes perfect sense. And again, that's why I say it's the least surprising thing ever. And so I thought of, you know, that part in the documentary as I read about this shooter. So again, it's definitely worth a watch, The Mask We Live In on Netflix. And as far as the shooting, like, I mean, I don't really have anything to say that hasn't been said. I don't really have any... like gun control takes, but it's just like what the fuck are we doing, man? Like, what the fuck are we doing? Like, think about the last time you were in a club, any club, and you know what I'm saying, you drunk, you with your friends, you trying to dance. It's probably the end of the week. You trying to let some steam off. It's the weekend. You trying to talk to some ladies or fellas, whatever. And like, where your mind is at, like, you're the last thing on your mind is thinking about a crazy person coming in and just shooting 100 people. And I, from what I've seen, you know, especially from the LGBT community, like one of the best things about Twitter, you know, you get to see different perspectives. And I've seen some very interesting ones concerning this. And I saw a lot of tweets talking about how, you know, if gay people are out in the streets, you know, they, if they are who they are, they get looked at funny and folks will say homophobic things and they'll get discriminated against and, you know, all this bullshit. But like the gay club was kind of their safe haven. You know, they could do what they felt. They could act however they liked. They could be themselves, really, because it was kind of like their turf. Like once you were inside those, you know, the walls of the club, you know, nobody was going to judge you. You can do whatever you want. You can turn the fuck up, do whatever you want. And like to have them taken away from them, you know, especially in that fashion, any fashion, but especially that fashion, it's awful. It's awful. You know, so whatever it is that you do, you know, whatever God it is that you pray to, whatever vibes or good energy you're working with, send that to those families, man. Send something to those families. They were talking to people that, you know, had to watch their friends, their good friends, bleed out after the psycho shot them. I saw it was a mother of 11 kids that was killed in there. 11 kids, 11 children are now motherless because some fucking psycho. Some psycho. And I think we all saw it. We saw where the mother, it was a mother who was texting with her son, you know, as he hid in the bathroom and was killed. And they're going back and forth and she's saying, you know, call the police, help, he's getting closer, I love you, all that. And she's texting him and he's not texting back. And come to find out that, you know, that young man was killed. And I'd seen, you know, the bodies were in the club up until like the next day. And they were talking about the rescue worker, or I guess the, not even rescue workers, the, I guess law enforcement or whatever was going in, and they're just hearing nonstop phones ringing because people are just calling their family members trying to see if they're okay. Like, just, like, think about all that. Think about all that. Think about what the fuck we're doing, man, to where, like, shit like that happens, and it's just kind of like another day. There's so many mass shootings, it's just kind of another day. So, again, whatever it is that you do, whoever it is you pray or don't pray to, whatever good vibes, whatever good energy you got, please send something to those families because they definitely need it. All right, next thing, last thing I really want to talk about, and I answer a couple questions, we'll get out of here. OJ Simpson, like if you're not watching Made in America, the ESPN 30 for 30, get with it. Get with it because it's phenomenal. It's some of the best work I've ever seen. And I say that, you know, not in hyperbole, it's really fantastic. Like just in terms of, you know, covering something that's been done plenty of times, like done earlier this year. I think we all watched OJ on FX and this is like, they still make it interesting. You know, they've still got audio I've never heard, visuals I've never seen. I'm still learning about the case. I'm still learning about OJ. I'm still learning about the LAPD's history, the racial, you know, stuff going on in LA and in that area. The drone shots, like they use drones to get a lot of overhead shots in LA and they're incredible. Like, I really hope this is the future for movies. Cause again, I imagine it would be cheaper and just the shots, themselves are incredible. So you get to see like the way they do like the contrast of like all the racial issues and the people being discriminated against and they throw it up against, you know, OJ yucking it up with some white folks on the golf course. Like it's so well done. I think it's Ezra Edelman, who I found out is the son of Marion Wright Edelman, if you're familiar with her. And it's so good. It's just doing such a good job portraying how white people saw O.J. Simpson and how O.J. Simpson saw O.J. Simpson. And the biggest thing, like one thing I've always failed to really grasp with O.J. Simpson is just how big he was, just what kind of a star he was. Because the only, you know, I don't remember any of this murder shit. I think I was 5 years old when this stuff happened. So I was trying to figure out, you know, how big of a star he was. Who was this comparable to? So I asked it during the FX series. And first thing I was like, I was like, okay, people who were grown at the time, what kind of star was OJ? And I got a bunch of answers from niggas younger than me. Like I was five, niggas, it was two for answering me. Don't answer that question, bro. You don't know. You don't know. I don't either. That's why I'm asking the question. But the consensus from people of age was a mixture of Michael Strahan and The Rock. You know, just for some kind of reference. And even then, that was selling OJ short. Like, OJ was carrying the torch in the Olympics. I don't think they let Michael Strahan or The Rock carry the torch in the Olympics. And I'd even got an answer, you know, someone who was of age and whose, you know, opinion I trust. And he had said, you know, Jordan was the next step. Like, Michael Jordan was the next step. Like, OJ clearly wasn't Michael Jordan, but I'm not sure how much closer you get, is what he said. So that, like, just for reference, that's how big of a deal OJ Simpson was. And another thing I didn't realize, which was kind of shocking, just because I'm pretty familiar with this case. I mean, just from reading and watching stuff, I didn't realize what a big piece of shit OJ was. Like, even from a young age, this wasn't something, like, he didn't turn 18. Like, it wasn't like the star quality. Like, he didn't go to USC a humble guy and come out, you know, this animal after he won the Heisman and rushed for 2,000 yards. Nah, OJ been a piece of shit forever, dog. Like, I was thinking about it. I really think OJ and Hitler, worst niggas of all time. OJ Simpson, Adolf Hitler, and Mrs. Richardson, who was my 11th grade social studies teacher. Like, it's really, fuck all three of them. I really think those are the worst three niggas of all time. I don't know if there's a close fourth. So I'll say this, and I won't spoil it, because one, you know what happens, and two, you really should watch this for yourself. You really should watch this for yourself. One thing I've been interested by, there's all this OJ content, like the FX show this calendar year, this 30 for 30 this calendar year, and I saw Martin Sheen is doing another documentary on OJ, which is scheduled to come out, I believe, this calendar year. OJ is up for parole next year. So I'm not saying, I'm just saying. I don't know why else they would do all this within this calendar year if something wasn't going to happen. Like, some shit going to jump off, man. I don't know if OJ's going to get out. He's going to get out. They're going to put him right back in. I said we should go jump him. Like, for all the shit he did, I think we should go jump OJ. But the one thing, what I was going to say, with every interview in this documentary, anyone close to OJ or Nicole or close to the situation, there's kind of like this, like, this thought that everybody knew this was going to happen. And it appeared to be like a lot of standing around. You know, I don't know for sure because I wasn't there, of course. But there was family, there were friends, there were cops involved in the case that all saw where this was headed. And it still went there. So I say that to say, you know, if you've got friends in your life right now that you know are abusive in any way, you know, especially like the way we've seen in this documentary, like, do what you can to check them. Like, let them know that, like, that's not okay. You know what I'm saying? If they're doing that to a woman, then you know they're not going to respect her word. If they've been in jail for it, you know the threat of law is not going to stop them. So, you know, I don't know what's left. As a friend, try to say something, man. Offer them to get them some help. Let them know you're there for them. But let them know, like, this can't slide. I don't know what the answer is, but I do know that, like, everybody in that documentary is pretty much like, yeah, we saw this coming. And, like, that's insane. That's the same. Everybody saw this coming over the course of like 6-7 years, and it still ended there. And after it happened, after this woman damn near had her head cut off and left two kids, everybody was like, yep, I pretty much saw that coming. So, you know, hopefully there's nothing this extreme in your life. But if it is, I do what you can. Do what you can. Try to check your friends now. Don't let that shit slide. Not in person, not online, none of that. Because, again, you see where it can go in this case and so many others. So do what you can. We got to do better. All right, just a couple questions and we'll get at it, as I mentioned. First question is, what makes a good beer or alcoholic beverage to you? For beer, I'm pretty simple. Like, is it cheap and does it get me drunk? Like, I'm not a beer snob at all. And craft beer Twitter wants my fade like twice a month because I think it's insane to be paying $13, $14, $15 for like one 12-14 ounce beer. And it's not because I haven't had them. I've had them. They were good. I enjoyed them. I'd rather have like 8 Bud Lights. Call it what you want. I feel the same about chicken. I'm not a snob. Chicken has done way too much for myself, for my family, to discriminate about, you know, boneless versus traditional. So I accept all chicken. I accept all beer. Except IPAs, because those are trash, which we have covered before. So as far as what's a good alcoholic beverage, a rule of thumb I've been using for a while is I usually drink beers lighter than me and liquors darker than me. And that's just a rule of thumb. I don't know where it came from, but it's fared me well. So a lot of light beers, a lot of dark liquors. And I mean, of course, not just any dark liquor. Like E&J is going to fuck you up. Hennessy and I have a on again, off again relationship. So basically any drink that I can drink a lot of, preferably outdoors, you know, the once a year I venture outdoors for not a lot of money. And it's not going to leave me feeling like I'm in the torture rack while riding a roller coaster underwater is good money with me. So yeah, I'm not hard to please. And last question this week is, who would win in a fight, a bear or a gorilla? Now, I've been beating this drum forever. Brock and I tried to tell you this, and this is a hill that I'm more than willing to die on. I think a grizzly bear would whoop everybody's ass. I think a grizzly would beat up a gorilla easily. Like, I've read that the swipe of a grizzly's palm has killed a lion. Their skull can't be penetrated by 357 Magnum bullets. Like, they're much bigger than gorillas. You know, gorillas have the, you know, lower center of gravity. They're very strong for their size. But bears, like, grizzly bears are fucking big. A grizzly bear might be twice as big, like, weigh twice as much as a gorilla. And also, gorillas eat, like, mostly plants. Like, gorillas are, like, vegans. So they probably do, like, mad CrossFit. So I think a grizzly who just, like, knocked a beehive down and ate all the honey, and who just caught a salmon out of the water with his own paw, I think a grizzly will fuck up a gorilla easy. And whenever these talks come up, I keep hearing about hippos, and I don't see it. I don't see it. I keep hearing, you know, hippos, their jaws are so strong, they can keep the bear in front of them by just turning, you know, their head. And I feel like a grizzly would just, like, bop him on the head. Like, it'd be, like, exactly like Hungry, Hungry Hippos. And he's out 2 weeks. NFL concussion protocol, no problem. So, yeah, grizzly versus gorilla. I feel like grizzlies would whoop gorilla's ass and everybody's ass. All right, and with that said, that brings show number 82 to a conclusion. As always, guys, I want to thank you so much for rocking me these first 82 shows. By now, you know where to find me. If you go to SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, search for True Withers, the show will come up. Do me a favor, go ahead and subscribe there so that the show will come to you every week. Got the email address set up. That's truewitherspodcast@gmail.com. The website is lookingupfromthefloor.wordpress.com. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, thank you so much to everybody that ordered a BQBX shirt. If you are still looking to support, PayPal, truewitherspodcast@gmail.com, Venmo, Tyler, I am. And if you did order a shirt, it should be coming your way shortly. Let me know when you receive that. You should have that by next Wednesday. So again, as always, guys, thanks so much for the support. And stay righteous.